As with everything our Lord said and did, there are many layers of meaning to what we just heard. Starting on the most, on the clearest level, on the practical level, in this discussion of how one is to conduct oneself at a banquet, it's just proper decorum, really. No one likes the person that tries to exalt themselves or seem self-important or talk about themselves all the time. If you have watched or heard the comedian Brian Regan, he refers to such people as me monsters, people that always, you know, say me, you know, talk about themselves at every kind of gathering and every possible circumstance. And so on a very thin level of politeness, our Lord is saying, you know, no one likes that. But of course, that's not what our Lord is just talking about. In fact, that's not even his main point. Even though it's practically helpful, he's not just talking about how we're to conduct ourselves at a banquet, etc., etc. He's talking about the virtue of humility, which we heard about in the first reading as well. But even so, we kind of misunderstand humility, that really important foundational virtue for the Christian life, necessary foundational virtue for the Christian life. Humility is not self-deprecation. Humility is not, demeaning yourself in order to elicit compliments. That's false humility. Humility is not pretending as if you don't have the talents and the gifts that you do have. Humility, really, when it comes down to it, is just authentic self-knowledge, knowing yourself as God knows you, for the good and the bad, knowing what gifts and talents and blessings have been bestowed upon you, and knowing your weaknesses, knowing yourself as you are known before God. That's all humility is. And so our Lord isn't saying, well, hey, you know, just kind of act like you're not that important so that you can be shown to be more important in front of everyone. He's not saying that at all. It's authentic self-knowledge, and it's an imitation of God himself. That's what humility is, an imitation of God himself. Even though God is the one who does not require the virtue of humility, he is the one that displayed it in the most profound way, in becoming incarnate, lowering himself to our human condition, you know, becoming incarnate in our human flesh, in our weak human flesh, lowering himself to serve us, even though clearly in that case, he is infinitely greater than us. So if God lowered himself to that extent for us, how much more ought we to do that for others? First, because it's an imitation of him, imitation of what he does for us, not only at the incarnation, but does for us every single day, every single moment of our lives. He is the one in whom we live and move and have our being. In every moment, our Lord sustains us. He condescends to give us life, to give us breath, and to give us grace. So humility is much different than people tend to think about it. It is authentic self-knowledge. In other words, it is not good if you are talented or you have some specific gift. It's not good to say that you don't have it. That's not humility. That's false humility. And if you have a failing, it's not good to pretend as if you don't have that failing. That's pride. Humility is simply knowing yourself as God knows you. Nothing more, nothing less. And the reason that's so important for salvation, necessary for salvation, is because if I don't know my weaknesses, then I don't know, or I'm not moved to go to the sacraments to receive God's mercy. If I don't know that every good thing in me comes from God, then I'm not moved to make sure that I always remain united to him through prayer and the sacraments. If I don't know that everything bad in me comes from myself, then I'm not moved to seek God's help in every single instance. That's how important humility is. It is the path to salvation. Last weekend we talked about how the road to salvation is narrow. And one of the main reasons is humility is very difficult. Humility is that by which we kind of shrink ourselves instead of puffing ourselves up like the Pharisees did, and those who are prideful. Humility is the way that we make ourselves small, that we can enter that narrow gate, that narrow way. Humility is self-knowledge, and we should all desire that. Even though it's kind of a scary prayer to ask God to show you who you are really without any kind of illusion, even though that's a scary realization, it's an important realization. It's an important realization because if I don't understand myself as God understands me, then I really probably can't be saved. Also keep in mind that just like when we talked about before a couple weekends ago, We don't deny ourselves simply for the sake of denying ourselves. We don't just deny ourselves because that's what we're supposed to do as Christians. We don't deny ourselves because we just want to reject pleasure and all happiness and all of that. We deny ourselves in this life because, as we mentioned before, it's the most rational thing we can do, because we are seeking the greatest happiness, the greatest pleasure, but that only comes in the life to come. Likewise here, humility for humility's sake is not what we're after. We don't humble ourselves just to humble ourselves. Our Lord says, you humble yourself, you'll be exalted. We should desire to be exalted, just not in this life. That's the simple message. It's not bad to desire to be exalted. In fact, we should have spiritual ambition. Ambition when it comes to sanctity, but not earthly ambition. So we don't humble ourselves just because our Lord tells us to and because it's an imitation of Him, although those are incredibly important reasons. We humble ourselves because that's how He says we become exalted and glorified. The one who wants to exalt himself or glorify himself at an earthly banquet is a fool. First of all, because it's super annoying when you encounter someone like that, right? We all can think of how, you know, there's probably someone in our lives that doesn't understand humility, that has incredible self-importance, and we know how unpleasant it is to be around such people. Right, he doesn't just tell us to avoid that. He's telling us, humble yourself so that you can be exalted in the heavenly banquet. It is good to desire that. In fact, what are we doing if we don't desire that? I think that's the reason a lot of people fall away from the faith, is because they don't understand that our final aim is incredible happiness. It's incredible joy, incredible peace. That it's okay to desire to be glorified before God, to be exalted by God, just in the life to come. If we desire to exalt ourselves in this life, it really shortens our vision. If we desire to exalt ourselves in this life, to be self-important, to be praised in this life, then we forget entirely the real reason that we're doing this, and that's to be exalted by God. So the Christian life, once again, not to repeat this over and over, the Christian life is about joy. It is about being glorified. It's not about self-denial merely. Self-denial is merely a means to an end, and that end is total, perpetual, eternal happiness. I think the warning that our Lord gives here also applies, and principally applies, I think, to the apostles and their successors as a caution. You know, that if someone in the religious life or in the priesthood, those who are ministers of the gospel, to them, this is a particularly deadly poison. It's like when people ask me, you know, how'd you decide on that career? Well, it's not a career, right? We shouldn't desire to climb a ladder as priests and bishops. And of course, as lay people, it's fine to desire advancement in your job, to desire advancement in your financial security, absolutely. But the kind of ambition that's dangerous is for the ministers of the gospel, right? To not understand that the higher you go, so to speak, the more you are supposed to be a servant. And I think the reason why a lot of the abuses happened is because you had priests and bishops becoming very self-important, you know, thinking that they wielded power. And that's a really, really dangerous thing. No one should desire advancement in a worldly sense if you're a minister of the gospel. Now, full disclosure, I did tell my parents when I was 5 that I wanted to be Pope. our current Holy Father took my name, so I will not be Francis II. I refuse, so... I was Francis before he was, so, but in any case, it's not good to desire that kind of advancement. And so I think principally it's dangerous for those who are supposed to be ministers of the gospel, but absolutely by extension, it's important for all of us not to desire glorification before man, right? Glorification before the eyes of this world. That is to abandon and forfeit the exaltation that comes in heaven. That's why our Lord says, not just here, but in many other places, you know, those who are last will be first. We should want to be first. But it's not to be first in this world. That's His only caution. It's not don't be ambitious. It's don't be ambitious when it comes to the things of this world. Be absolutely ambitious when it comes to the life of sanctity. How do you think the saints and the martyrs became saints and martyrs? Because they desired very, very strongly to be exalted in heaven. They wanted to be glorified by Christ. They wanted to be glorified by the other saints, praised by the other saints. That's why you had some saints trying to go and get martyred, And speaking of Francis, St. Francis did the same thing. He like sought out martyrdom. It didn't work for him, but he was trying to be martyred because he had a kind of ambition for sanctity. So the basic takeaway is be ambitious, but be ambitious when it comes to the things of God, not to the things of this world. You will not be a saint unless you are ambitious when it comes to the things of God. And you will not be a saint if you are ambitious when it comes to the things of this world. And I think on a final practical note, we tend to kind of soften the things that our Lord says. And sometimes, rightly, we take them in a symbolic way. Like, I'll say, extreme things to have an effect on us, even though he doesn't mean them literally. When he tells us, for example, to pluck out our eye if it's causing us to sin, you know, we're not to take that literally. But when he says things like, even though they make us uncomfortable, when he says things like, when you prepare a lunch or a dinner, you have a lunch or a dinner, bring in those who are sick, those who are poor, those who are marginalized, those who are blind, crippled, etc. He actually means that. We shouldn't take the radical and extreme element of the gospel out of it. We shouldn't suck all of the life out of it and think that, oh, he's just saying, you know, be nice to those who are more lowly. No, he's actually saying, literally, invite the poor to your table. You know, literally, invite those who have no one else to dine with you. Precisely because that's the best imitation of God that you can do. Because God is the one who condescended and can receive no payment from us. It was just utter generosity, utter gratuitous love that he showed towards us. So he says, invite those people who can't pay you back because you will be more blessed. Because that's the absolute opposite of earthly ambition. To serve others with no desire for repayment, no desire for applause, no desire for honor. So be ambitious, but be ambitious in the right way.